4. Lamentations 4. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand your words, help us to look at it doctrinally and historically, and if there's some practical things that we can apply in our lives, or just some ideas that we need to believe and change, help us to understand your words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Lamentations 4. I'm always kind of amazed at how man misses some things in the Bible, meaning me too, also, just like everybody else. Just last 2 weeks, I've had to adjust some of my thinking of as far as where the Jewish temple's going to be. Okay, and it's not where everybody thinks it's supposed to be. And there's a couple references in the Bible that makes it quite obvious where it's not where it's supposed, where we think it's supposed to be. And when you look at all these references, it's like, man, how did you miss that? How did we miss that? And, of course, it's not that big of a deal. Anybody planning on being around during the temple? I'm not planning on being around. But it's just amazing to me how man gets it slightly off. And I noticed that in 1997 when I went to Israel, where man says the thing happened here, and when you read the Bible, it didn't happen here, it happened over here. It's just a little bit off. And the same goes with the Jewish temple. And I'll go through some of that when we go through chapter 4. Verse 1, how has the gold become dim? How has the most fine gold changed? The stones of the sanctuary are poured out in the top of every street. Okay, historically, that's what the Babylonians did. Doctrinally, it's going to happen in a trib also. But remember, the stones of the sanctuary that Jesus prophesied in Mark, when Judas Iscariot and all the apostles took Jesus to the Jewish temple of the day. And Judas was enamored with the buildings and how amazed it was. And then he was bragging about this great building. And Jesus said, well, every stone of this building is going to be brought down. Every one of them is going to be brought down. And that happened in 70 A.D. So you had it in 606, 70 A.D. In the tribulation, it's also going to be overrun by Gentiles. Okay, but in this context, the word gold is not referring to the precious metal, okay? In the next verse, it shows that he's using gold as an illustration of people, or the Jewish people, where in verse 2, the precious sons of Zion comparable to fine gold. See, so that's how he's referring to it. How are they esteemed as earthen pitchers, the work of the hands of the potter? Okay, the word Zion, okay, any other city, does that city go by? Anybody remember any other city? I'm not, judge you on this thing because I had to do my little research on that. Zion, any other city brings about? Okay, how about 2 Samuel 5, verse 7? That one may not even be helping if I'm remembering right. 2 Samuel 5. Yeah, it is. Yep. Verse 7. This is the first time the word Zion is found in the Bible. Okay, and some folks would say, okay, this little nitpicky historical archaeology stuff, not really, who really cares? Well, if you're going to Israel, it would be interesting. But there is something that we're going to practically get out of this. 2 Samuel 5, 7, this is the first time the word Zion is found in the Bible. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion. The same is the city of David. Okay, what is another name for that, if you remember that? The city of David. You're going to kick yourself. But no, Bethlehem. Bethlehem. So Zion is called the city of David, and it's also Bethlehem. And a lot of times when we think of towns or cities in the Bible, Bethlehem, in our mind's eye, do we think a large city? Oh, little town of Bethlehem. They got that right. At the time, it was about 12 square miles. Or 12 acres. I'm sorry, 12 acres. It was 12 acres. 12 acres, that's only two more acres than I have. 10 acres. And it had about 2,000 people in that little area. In Bethlehem, what a significant place. That's where David was buried. That's where most likely Abraham offered up Isaac. Now, everybody will throw that on Mount Moriah, which is where the Dome of the Rock is. But if we go back to Genesis 22, it says, go to the mountains of Moriah and sacrifice your son on the mountain that I will tell thee. So it doesn't say specifically the mountain. It's like a lot of people looking for Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat, but it doesn't say that. It says the mountains of Ararat. And what one letter can throw, we're not so precise with the Bible, can throw us off. Okay, so if you run the idea of Zion, okay, that is also Bethlehem. And remember when David made them the grave error of numbering the people and the army in a census that he did, and then God says, okay, I'm going to give you three choices. I'm going to spank you bad, and here's the three choices you're going to get. And he chose one after 70,000 people died. Then he said, I want you to buy the threshing floor of Ornan. Remember he said that? That's 2 Samuel 24, 1 Chronicles 21. And that is the location of Bethlehem. All those things took place. So that's where Abraham buried, that's where Isaac, let's say, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Jacob, that's where Jacob buried Rachel in Bethlehem. And that's where many of the kings were buried, in Bethlehem, or they would call it Zion, or the city of David. And look, if you would, in 2 Chronicles chapter 3. Now today, the Jews will go to a place called the Wailing Wall, and they will sit there by the wall or stand there by the wall with their little beanie, and they'll rock back and forth, and they'll pray, and the men are over here, and this, or the ladies are over here on this side, and the men are on this side, and they'll sit there and pray, and then they'll run their, have all the stuff that's doing. And the reason why they do that is they believe that that is the closest that they could actually get to the site where the temple is supposed to be, because the Muslims dominate or control the Dome of the Rock, where they have the big dome and everything. And when I was on the tour to Israel, Ron Wyatt said, back over here in this gazebo, that's where the Jewish temple is going to be in the tribulation. That sounds good to me. But this last 2 weeks I've been looking at it and said, oh man, it can't be. It can't be on top of Mount Moriah. 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1. Then Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem in Mount Moriah. But then he adds to this, where the Lord appeared unto David his father, in the place that David had prepared in the threshing floor of Onan the Jebusite. That's Bethlehem. Okay, logically think about this. If you're going to sacrifice 10,000 cattle, or however many, I didn't even remember the count that Solomon did on that day, where's all the blood going? Where's all the blood and guts? Man, that's a lot of animals. Well, it states that there was a well that sprang out. It's called the Well of Gihon. And that serviced the Jewish priest, where all the sacrifices were run down that water as it ran down away from there. And there's no water on Mount Sinai. None whatsoever. But there is in Bethlehem. And so that Jewish temple, I would say part of it was there, but maybe some of it Solomon extended up on the Temple Mount. But the Jews, if they want to get to the place where they want to get close to where the Jewish temple was, all they got to do is turn around, head south about 500 feet, and they're in Bethlehem. But they can't do that. You know why they can't go to Bethlehem today? It's Palestinian controlled. Now, that's what the devil will do. The devil will infiltrate an interest of God so that a person can't really get there. And that's why the Canaanites, he had to boot them out of the land of Canaan, because they were imposters. They were infiltrating God's interest in this land. And that's why he had Joshua and all of them go in and wipe these people out, because they were not where they were supposed to be. They were supposed to be south, way south. Get out of here. That's not for you. That's for God's people. That's not for the devil's people. But the devil is infatuated with the things of God, so he's going to have his people in there. And if you go to Bethlehem today, which that is one aspect of the tour, and you could just go into Bethlehem, you could just feel like, man, am I going to get, somebody's going to come after me. It's very, very dangerous today. Okay, and that area is the area that the Jewish temple, the Lord, is going to get it in the right place during the millennium. I don't know if the Antichrist is going to get it in the right place. Let's look for the running water, 2 Samuel 23. You remember when David was running from Saul, and he's standing out there at night looking out into the darkness, and he's kind of talking or daydreaming out loud. And he says, oh man, if I can just have some water, if I can just get some water from that unique place that he mentioned, 2 Samuel 23:15. Said, and David longed and said, oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. In Nehemiah, that's called the fountain gate. And then the three mighty men, verse 16, they went. Notice the Philistines were in Bethlehem then. The Philistines are the modern-day Palestinians. They're still in there. Okay, and so then those three mighty men went to that well behind enemy territory, got some water and brought it back to David. And then you know what he did is he poured it on the ground as a sacrifice to God. And so that is just phenomenal. And I found another passage where it says that God is going to judge Jerusalem. He's going to wipe it out. But then he says about Zion where it's going to be plowed by farmers. It's going to be plowed. It's going to be wiped out and plowed. And that cannot happen on Mount Moriah. But it is happening today in Bethlehem, because that's a little south and it's got a little valley, a little hill where they can farm. Exactly as the Bible says, God is very precise about these. Very detailed, very precise. Now, these sons of Zion, why did God do that? Okay, here's Isaiah's comment about the children of Zion. The children of Zion would be the priest that were part of the Jewish tabernacle. Isaiah chapter 3. And what God has done, he has done exactly as he said. Now there is a fellow that's done a little archaeology work there, a guy named Kornicki or something like that. He's not a Bible believer, but he's been discovering some of these things. And my friend up in Alaska said, hey, you got to look at this stuff. And when I'm looking at it, I say, oh, man, again, got to adjust some other ideas. Isaiah 3, verse 6. 16, I'm sorry. Isaiah 3, 16. Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tingling with their feet. Therefore, the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts. And further down the line, that's what we're getting ready to read in chapter 4 of Lamentations. He told them that. Let's see, he also said Isaiah 33:14 about these people from Zion. So the people of Zion or Bethlehem, this would be supposed to be the cream of the crop of Judaism. Isaiah 33:14. The sinners in Zion are afraid. The sinners, when he uses that phrase under the Old Testament, that is a bad connotation. First time the word sinners in Genesis 13:13, that's sodomites and murderers. And he's calling them sinners in Zion, are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the hypocrites. They're a bunch of hypocrites. Isaiah 37:22. Now, Isaiah is prophesying about 100 years before Jeremiah and Babylon. And so obviously it got worse and worse. Isaiah 37:22. This is the word which the Lord has spoken concerning him. The virgin, the daughter of Zion, hath despised thee. And laugh thee to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem hath shaken her head at thee. So you have Zion and Jerusalem. They're side by side. It's like a city and a suburb. And so this is why God did that. Okay, and so in chapter 4, verse 2, he says, these people. Okay, now there's a phrase that sometimes, you ever hear person or a preacher who, you know, is real cultured and he walks just right, sits just right, he says the right things, not me, okay, and they say he's polished. Lamentations 4:7. At the end, they're polishing. These people were polished for Judaism. They were taught all the exact right things, what you're supposed to do in this Jewish sacrifice, in this one, in this one, and they walk just so, and they look just perfect, you know. They're polished. Okay, and that being polished went to their head, and they got haughty. Okay, so chapter 4, verse 2, the precious sons of Zion, comparable to fine gold, how are they esteemed as earthen pitchers? The works of the hands of the potter. Okay, the hands of the potter, where this is junk clay. Throw it out. They're throwing this stuff away is what they're doing. The cross reference there will also reinforce the same idea. And then the writer seems to go out in Never Never Land as he's writing about the Jewish temple, and he talks about sea monsters. What's that got to do with anything? Okay, the idea is that these people are being totally wiped out by God, and God is of no concern to them. And so then he says, even the sea monsters draw out the breast, they give suck to the young ones. How did he know about the whales being mammals, or what scientists say is a mammal? A whale is an unusual fish. Now, scientists will say that it's a mammal, but the Bible says it's a fish. It's an unusual fish. They wouldn't classify it as a fish because, you know, a whale is God's joke on the evolutionist. How many whales drowned before they learned that they had supposed to have gills? In order for a whale to follow the evolutionary theory, it had to walk up on land, learn how to breathe, and then backslid back into the water. He's a backslidden evolutionist. And that's a God's joke on the evolutionist. The whales, the porpoise, the dolphins. Okay, and so he's using that as an example. He said, even the whale gives suck to its young. And he's going to say, God's not doing that for the Jews because they have gone too far. He says, the daughter of my people has become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. Now, I don't know if this guy's ever seen an ostrich, Jeremiah. I don't know if they even got them things in Israel. And the cross reference will tell us that the ostrich will lay its egg and then forget where it laid its eggs. And then will up and step on its own children, own young. And he's likening the Lord judging Judah like the ostrich is cruel to her own young. That's what the writer's doing. And I find it interesting that in the Jewish temple, or there's a museum in Israel, that the Temple Museum, I think is what it's called, where Jewish priests, rabbis, whatnot, they're trying to get all the the right material for the Jewish temple. They're trying to get all the pots and pans. They're trying to get everything ready to go. They're trying to arrange a red heifer. And there, evidently, when I was there in 97, they said that there's a certain color, a special color blue that they needed. And they could find nothing in the world at the time that they could find to get this color blue that they needed. Until of late, they found some sea animal, I don't know, clam, something, that allows them to make that special color. And that was one of their latest discoveries at that time. At that time, they had not approved of a red heifer yet. They thought they had one, but it had a blemish. And it's my understanding that they now approve of a certain red heifer, which is necessary, okay, for the cleansing of the national sin of Israel for slaying the innocent blood of their Messiah. That's in Deuteronomy 21 and in Numbers 19. So then he's going to liken that those creatures, those animals, the sea he calls it a monster, okay, and the ostrich. And then he says, the tongue of the sucking child cleaveth to the roof of his mouth. Okay, so the Jews cannot take care of their own young because God is judging them. The roof of his mouth for thirst, the young children ask bread, and no man breaketh it unto them. Okay, so doctrinally, if you jump this into the tribulation, remember Jesus said, woe unto them that give suck in these days. Tribulation time period. And that's why he says, give unto us our daily bread, 3.5 year drought. So the thing jumps into the future. Verse 5, they that did feed delicately are desolate in the streets. They that were brought up in scarlet. So these were the rich, the polished, embrace dunghills. Okay, and Psalm 113 says that the Lord is going to rescue these people from the dunghills. New Bibles don't update that word. Okay, verse 6. For the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, that was overthrown as in a moment, and no hand stayed her. So he's saying it would have been better to be blown off the map in an instant like Sodom and Gomorrah than to die slowly of starvation. And that's what's happening to him. Her Nazarites were purer than snow. They were whiter than milk. They were more ruddy in body than rubies. Their polishing was of sapphire. Okay, remember it says that David was ruddy. Okay, so ruddy is a red brown. So this is describing the physical appearance of these people where they're white and ruddy. And that is a description of Jesus in his natural state in Song of Solomon. He describes the Lord that way. Okay, not that he's of the white race. He is a fair-complected Jewish man. Okay, ruddy, red-brown. That's what David was. Okay, where he was fair-complected, when then you have a darker-complected Jew. Okay, just like you have Mexicans, where Felipe was darker-complected. Veronica was a little more fair-complected. Okay, and so he's describing what they look like, okay, and but because of the famine, because of the siege, 18-month siege, their visage is blacker than coal, blacker than a coal. They are not known in the streets. People don't recognize them. Their skin cleaveth to their bones. It is withered. It has become like a stick. Just like any pictures, if you see any pictures of the Holocaust, the Jewish people of the Holocaust. They that be slain with a sword are better than they that be slain with hunger. Well, that's true, yeah. Okay, for these pine away, stricken though for want of the fruits of the fields, the hands of the pitiful women have sodden their own children. Yeah, that is pitiful. They were their meat in the destruction of the daughter of my people. Okay, at the word Sodom, the cross-reference runs you to Leviticus, Deuteronomy, 2 Kings, and two other passages. The Lord told them twice in the law, Leviticus and Deuteronomy, that if you do this, I am going to do this, and this is what's going to happen. And he described that in detail. Okay, do they go back to the law and read that and say, why did this happen? Well, the Lord told you why it's going to happen. He forewarned them. But these people were too busy reading the Talmud rather than the Torah. And the same thing is happening in a church today. The Talmud is the commentaries of the Jewish rabbis of the Torah and the Old Testament. And they're pretty bad commentaries. If you want to read portions of the Talmud, go to the Valparaiso Law Library, not the Law Library, the other library, and they've got the volumes there, about 20, 24 of them. And draggy reading, I guess you could say. But it's the commentaries, it's not the Bible. And sadly, this is what happens in a lot of Christian schools where they read books about the Bible, but they don't read the Bible, and now they're not even doing that, where they're reading all the modern perversions. And so this is why people are so lax on their Bible, and the church is doing the same thing Israel is doing. And God told us, the church, he told us, don't you boast against those branches. That's Israel. You boast against those branches, you're going to do the same thing they do. And we can see the church is doing the same thing. What is it? We look back and Israel was griping. They wanted to go back to Egypt. What's the church doing today? Egyptian music, Egyptian Bibles, Egyptian morals. That's what the church is doing today. Same thing. Okay, and so what's happening? In verse 11, the Lord hath accomplished his fury. He hath poured out his fierce anger. He hath kindled a fire in Zion. In Zion. And hath devoured the foundations thereof. So, historically, at that time, doctrinally, tribulation time. 12, the kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the world would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy should have entered into the gates of Jerusalem. Historically, Nebuchadnezzar, type of the Antichrist, adversary, doctrinally, Satan, the Antichrist. There are many adversaries. You have Haman, who's a type of the Antichrist. There's about 18 of them, types of the Antichrist. If you study those 18, you'll know exactly all you need to know about the Antichrist. So, he's entered into the gates of Jerusalem. Okay, why is this happening? Verse 13, for the sins of her prophet and the iniquities of her priests that have shed the blood of the just in the midst of her. That's what they're doing. Micah 3:9 writes more details of that. That's the ones doing it. So the Lord says, by your blood it's going to be shed. Now Zion, we know, does have a promise. Several promises. Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. Zechariah 9, verse 9. Let's see. This one's got some changes in every new Bible. Yeah, every new Bible takes a couple of words out. Zechariah 9, 9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. So you have both of them, Zion and Jerusalem. So this is Bethlehem and Jerusalem. They're side by side. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation removed from the new Bibles. That's out. Lowly and riding upon an ass, upon the colt, the foal of an ass. Okay, we know that's Palm Sunday. That's when he was anointed to be king, but he was a prince because he's riding on the colt, the foal of an ass. That's what a crowned prince rides on. A white mule. Okay, that's what a crown prince, but when he becomes officially king, he rides a white horse. And that's why Jesus was writing that. Bible, God, very precise, very detailed. Okay, and a lot of times we overlook those things, but God's very precise, very particular about these things. That's a promise of Zion. Of course, there's a bunch of promises for Zion that modern day Christians who are saying that God's done with Israel, replacement theology, they are ignoring all those promises to Zion. So let's see, that's 14. They have wandered, okay, they have wandered as blind men in the streets. They have polluted themselves with blood so that men could not touch their garments. They cried unto them, depart ye, it is unclean, depart, depart, touch not. When they fled away and wandered, they said among the heathen, they shall no more sojourn there. The anger of the Lord hath divided them. So he's dividing the land of Israel. He will no more regard them. I should have put a cross reference at the word regard. There's one in Leviticus that it says God will regard the nation of Israel. Let's see, Leviticus 26, 9. And we can see how the United Nations and company voted of late. Did you see how they voted against what Trump said about Jerusalem being the capital? Yeah, that's their attitude. But Israel should be above the United Nations, but yet they're not because of their judgment. Yeah, when they did what God said, Leviticus 26, 9, I will have respect unto you and make you fruitful, multiply, and establish my covenant with you. That's if they did right. That is a, shall we say, a respect of nations, or that's a special treatment. Okay, where now it's not that way. He will no more regard them. During the tribulation, no more. That's judgment of God upon Israel. When he's done with that, Daniel's 70th week, then he takes out his wrath upon the world and then restores the Jewish remnant. He will no more regard them. They respected not the persons of the priest. They favored not the elders. As for us, our eyes have yet failed for our vain help. In our watching, we have watched a nation that could not save us. So they were hoping somebody's going to help them out. Okay, of that time period, I think might have been Egypt they were hoping for, but that didn't pan out. If this is doctrinal, would they be hoping that America is going to try to bail them out? I know, as of today, America is favorable towards Israel. Canada, they abstain from voting. Australia, they abstain from voting. Okay, and but in the trib, there's going to be no help from America because all the nations are going to turn against them. So if that's the general viewpoint, America, when America was founded, they were... After King George hired German mercenaries, they sent out some ambassadors to France, hoping that France would send some soldiers and try to help fight against Britain, but that didn't pan out. It was vain help. Verse 18, they hunt our steps that we cannot go into our streets. Okay, they hunt. Now that was foretold by Jeremiah himself in Jeremiah 16, 16. And the idea of hunting them is exactly what happened in the World War II. I mean, they hunted them down, went from door to door, house to house, looking for these people. Jeremiah 16, he did tell them that. Verse 16. He said, behold, I will send many fishers, saith the Lord, and they shall fish them. Okay, who did that? Did not Jesus tell the apostles, ye shall be fishers of men? So there was when they rejected the fisher of men, Jesus Christ, he says, and after will I send many hunters. And that was ever since then when they said, let his blood be upon us and our children. Yeah, they've hunted him down. And they shall hint them from every mountain, from every hill, and out of the holes of the rocks. Boy, that's exactly what happened. So the same is going to happen in the trib. He says, they hunt our steps that we cannot go into our streets. Our end is near. Our end. Doctrine, boy, that should be a good flag there. Our days are fulfilled, for our end is come. Okay, that's a word for the end, enduring to the end. Our persecutors are swifter than the eagles of the heaven. Now, I don't know if he's not going to describe the if Jeremiah was transported into the future. Okay, I doubt the Babylonian army technically could move as fast as eagles can, but helicopters sure can. There are a couple of cases like that where the Bible will imply those things. Now, I don't know if Jeremiah actually saw them. Some of the characters actually saw these things. That's what John saw in Revelation. He actually saw these things and had to describe them. Let's try Psalm 66. This is a hint at it. Psalm 66, verse 12. Okay, when you kind of run down through there, make a joyful noise unto God, all ye lands. That sounds a little millennial. Verse 4, all the earth shall worship thee and shall sing unto thee. They shall sing to thy name, Selah. Okay, now we're nowhere on safe ground. Second coming. Going into the millennium, Selah is tribulation, second coming. And down in verse 12, thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. How do you ride over somebody's head? Well, that's what they're doing in airplanes. They're riding over people's heads. Another similar, unusual statement, Isaiah 60, verse 8. Isaiah 60, verse 8, it's a question. And he says, let's see, what's the context we got here? It's got to be second coming. Oh, yeah, 6:1, that's definitely second coming. Dromedary is a Midian. That's Saudi Arabia. Sheba, Queen of Sheba. That was foretold. Verse 8, who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their windows? That's an unusual question. But somebody's flying above the clouds. Let's try. How about Nahum chapter 2? Micah, Nahum, chapter 2, verse 1. So the Bible will seem to touch on these things, but they're not going to say they rode on a 747 because they didn't know what that was, and nobody would have known what that was. Nahum 2, verse 1. He that dasheth in pieces is come up before thy face. Keep the munition. Okay, we'd say ammunition. Watch the way, make thy loins strong, fortify thy power mightily. For the Lord hath turned away the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel. For the emptiers have emptied them out and marred their vine branches. So Israel's being judged. The shield of his mighty men is made red. The valiant men are in scarlet. So blood everywhere. The chariots shall be with flaming torches in the day of his preparation. A chariot. Moving faster in flaming torches. The day in his preparation, the fir tree shall terribly shaken. Whatever that is, it's shaken and moving the ground. The chariot shall rage in the street. They shall jostle one against another in the broadways. They shall seem like torches. They shall run like the lightning. Sounds like a fast-moving car to me. Now, what's the designation for the power of the engine? Horsepower. Because it's a chariot without the horse. But it's got some horses under that engine in a form of mechanical. And how does that engine work? A fuel of fire. Isaiah chapter 9, I think it mentions that one. Fuel of fire. Isaiah 9, verse 5. And it seems like these writers are describing modern mechanized cavalries. And Isaiah 9 is the same context, Day of Midian, Saudi Arabia. It is dealing with the same context, so we're pretty on safe ground here. Verse 5, for every battle of the warrior is with confused noise and garments rolled in blood, army tanks rolled right over the bodies. But this shall be with burning and fuel of fire. So that's how the engine works, you know. At the right time, a little of gas goes in there, it vaporizes, spark plug ignites, boom, it explodes, pushes the piston down, okay, and it keeps doing that over and over, okay, and that's how those things operate. And so these writers seem to write, little, and I bet you Isaiah, when he wrote that down, what's that? I bet Jeremiah is right. That's weird. And the Lord probably said, don't worry about it. Good, good. Okay, I'm not going to worry about it. And the psalmist, he wrote that right above their heads. How do they do that, Lord? He said, forget it. You wouldn't understand. I got to put you in a time traveling machine and go up so many few years and you still wouldn't understand. Forget it. I'm going to leave that with John. Let him try to describe it. And that's why John uses like and as so much. This is like this. This is like that. This is like this. I don't know what it is. Can you imagine pushing us up into the future 50? I mean, if you push, you know, it's 50 years in agriculture. In agriculture, when I was a kid, if you'd say you can have a combine that will steer itself. Right. Yeah, that's what they can do, GPS and everything. And if you don't know how to parallel park, Nolan can help you with that. He can put a thing in your car and make your car parallel park by itself. And push a button, right? Is that in some of the new Fords? For a trailer, too? How about a farm wagon with... I don't think it'll do that one. That one's tougher. Farmer showed me that I could never do that until a guy showed me the secret. Oh, now I got to figure it out. It's still tough. Still tough. So, I don't know. Isn't this book amazing? Our persecutors, Lamentations 4:19. I don't know. I think that was the one verse, Brother Jim, you asked me about last week. 4:19. 4:17. Okay, so let's see. 4, I think I got to 19. Our persecutors are swifter than the eagles of the heaven. They pursued us upon the mountains. They laid wait for us in the wilderness. How can you do that? Man, any of these helicopters can do that. Zoom here, boom over here, over here. And the breath of our nostrils, the anointed of the Lord, was taken in their pits. So they got dungeons, prisons, of whom we said, under his shadow we shall live among the heathen. And that'd be Psalm 91. We'll stop there 20, come back to 21. Probably could finish it up next time. Okay, any questions or comments when we covered?